106.6. That was the Red Hot Chili Peppers with The Adventures of Rain Dance Maggie. I'm Don Robinson, and you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. It's a weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games, plus the charts, a look at what's new on TV, and news for all three. DVDFever.co.uk is a non-profit website and has recently had a revamp, so please do take a look. If you've got anything else to say, about anything you hear on the show today, please get in touch via the Facebook page, facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. So we've lots of trailers and everything else, you know, all the films and video games, because that's what we'll have later on, that you hear on the show today. First hour is all about films, and we'll start off with a review of Bad Teacher, on Blu-ray. Then we have a look at the top 10 movie charts. Then we have the new cinema releases, including Happy Feet 2 and The Thing. Yes, they made a remake of The Thing. We have some new DVD releases, including Hangover 2 and The Smurfs, and also some film news. So we start off with a review of Bad Teacher, which is obviously about Cameron Diaz playing a teacher, in this case by the name of Elizabeth Halsey. But at the start of the film, she's actually leaving John Adams Middle School, known as JAMS, after merely a year as she's due to get married. Unfortunately for her, her wealthy fiancé has realised what a gold digger she is, and promptly dumps her, adding that she has to move out, leaving her no alternative but to return to work at the school she clearly hates. Back in the thick of it, Liz is asked out by partially overweight PE teacher Russell Gettis, Jason Segel, who in turn promptly turns him down because he's far too superficial and knows how to suck up to the fit and influential men in the school. As such, she also tries to chat up the new substitute teacher, Scott Delacourt, Justin Timberlake, who's clearly a nerd, but for some reason women find him attractive. They must be mad. Still, you know, there's no accounting for taste. The key cast members are rounded out by British actress Lucy Punch, going from blonde to redhead and putting on an effervescent performance as the overly cheerful Amy Squirrel, who's also very annoying in Liz's eyes. When it comes to the title of the movie, Elizabeth Halsey is a bad teacher because she drinks, she smokes, anything, and shows zero interest in her pupils, especially by the fact she doesn't even try to teach them properly, as shown by the fact she plays movies to them on a daily basis, not only from day one of the school year, but also including inappropriate ones like Scream, and all while nursing a hangover. Of course, being a teacher won't make you rich, and she only has one ambition in life, and that's to get a fake pair of breasts. Hence, 20 minutes into the film, she takes charge of the 7th grade charity car wash and makes a lot of much-needed money on the side by dressing provocatively and writhing around on the cars, all to Whitesnake's Still of the Night, which is stated in the extras, which was also played on set to help her get into the scene. There's also some snappy dialogue in the film, such as when token overweight teacher Phyllis Smith, Lynn Davis, sees Scott coming into the cafeteria and says, "I just love how his eyes sparkle when he smiles," while Liz adds, "I just want him to sit on his..." Yeah, I can't say that at daytime. Of course, you know that Liz will end up falling for Russell because despite him not being attractive or rich, she finds a common bond with him, and that's where they click. The two actors also have good chemistry between them, although this isn't demonstrated as often as it could be. Overall, Bad Teacher will never win any major awards, but it does make for a worthy 90 minutes or so of entertainment, and this is definitely worth a rental at least. Presented in the original theatrical ratio and in 1080p high definition, the quality of the print is fine, but it doesn't feel as well defined as a Blu-ray should. It looks a bit more sharp than a good DVD, but that's about it. Audio-wise, the film is presented in 5.1 DTS HD Master Audio, but doesn't really get any kind of a workout as the soundtrack is just used for dialogue and ambience. With the extras, we have a JAMS yearbook, which is about 12 minutes. It's for 7 teachers and 4 pupils and the principal. This extra gives you about 1 minute apiece for all of them, showing many of their best clips, such as behind the scenes style footage rather than culled straight from the film. So that makes for a neat little extra. It's also a 5 minute gag reel where all the cast corpse while trying to film many scenes. There's outtakes lasting 4 minutes. That's 4 scenes, also with a lot of corpsing. Then there's deleted and extended scenes lasting about 6 minutes, and there's 6 of them here. They're all clearly very short, given that this segment runs for just a bit longer than the same number of minutes. I'd put back in Dr. Vogel discusses breast enhancement, boner patrol, and Elizabeth comforts student. I won't spoil what's in them. Well, you can tell by some of the titles, but I won't spoil them by revealing them if you haven't seen the film. But the rest either don't need to go back in or cover ground that's already dealt with enough in the theatrical version. There's way beyond the scenes with Jason and Justin, where Mr. Segel and Mr. Timberlake jokingly pretend to have a game of one-upmanship. That's quite an amusing extra. That lasts about 6 minutes. There's Raising More Than Funds, which is a featurette about the charity car wash and Cameron Diaz's skimpy outfit. There's A Very Odd Blacksmith Story. It's a small featurette about the blacksmiths in the film. Well, I didn't even realise that's what the actor playing the blacksmith was. It just seemed like another location, as no mention was made to it being a blacksmith's at the time. There's Swimming with the Dolphins, because the principal is obsessed with dolphins. And Good Teacher, which is chat from the main characters and crew about what makes a good teacher, ironically mixed with clips of proving why Cameron was a bad one. All of these lasted just a few minutes each, by the way. There's Play the Film with Added Footage Marker. Now you're getting the extended Schools Out version of the film here, so this will tell you exactly what's been added in those additional 2 to 3 minutes. The box claims this is the rude version, but there's nothing particularly rude about, you know, what's been added. It's just mostly inconsequential lines of dialogue. Still, that's marketing for you. In some cases, the marker also appears when stronger language has been used to point out what was left in the theatrical cut. But in the UK, this rates the 15 certificate in both cases. So if we had the regular version here, that wouldn't be a great deal of difference. The cover art is a bit lame, however, just Diaz, Timberlake and Siegel, as opposed to the off-scene artwork of Cameron Diaz almost asleep at a desk, legs up on a desk. Presuming they are her legs. They probably are. But we all remember the fake cover for Pretty Woman, where Julia Roberts' head was on her, well, it was her own, but the entirety of her body below Richard Gere's tie belonged to a model. So overall film, give it 7 out of 10. So it's worth seeing. It's not, you know, I say it's not going to win any awards, but it's worth a watch. Picture and sound, 7 out of 10. Extras, 5. So overall, it's a reasonable 7 out of 10, worth a rental at least. Okay, in a moment we're having the top 10 movie charts. But first of all, we'll have a bit of music from Ricky Ross and The Lovers. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Ricky Ross with The Lovers, and you're back on the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on Manchester's 106.6. Now, this section is the top 10 movie charts, and I always go through the US movie charts here, because I never could find a reliable source for the UK ones, with the Internet Movie Database being particularly hit and miss, and Rotten Tomatoes site just not being ideal, to be honest. But anyway, number one, we've got Twilight Saga with Breaking Dawn Part 1. Now, in the highly anticipated next chapter of the blockbuster Twilight Saga, the newfound married bliss of Bella Swan, Kristen Stewart, and vampire Edward Cullen, Robert Pattinson, is cut short when a series of betrayals and misfortunes threatens to destroy their world. After their wedding, Bella and Edward travel to Rio de Janeiro for their honeymoon, where they finally give in to their passions. Bella soon discovers she's pregnant, and during a nearly fatal childbirth, Edward finally fulfills her wish to become immortal. But the arrival of their remarkable daughter, Renesmee, sets in motion a perilous chain of events and that pits the Cullens and their allies against the Volturi, the fearsome council of vampire leaders, setting the stage for an all-out battle. Ooh. A suspenseful and deeply romantic Breaking Dawn continues a tale of, the epic tale rather, of supernatural fantasy and passionate love that has made the Twilight Saga a worldwide phenomenon. Well, I've never seen a Twilight film in my life, nor do I have the inclination to do it, but in the trailer, man turns to wolf just as Bella is about to marry her man, but let's face it, it's not going to change anything. If you love the Twilight books and films and are probably a teenage girl, then you'll see this regardless of what I say. The end. Then at number two, we've got The Muppets, which took $29.5 million. When three Muppet fans learn that Tex Richmond wants to drill under the Muppet Theatre for oil, Gary, Mary and Walter set out to find the Muppets who have been split up for years. Kermit lives in his own mansion, depressed in Hollywood. Shame. Gonzo is a high-class plumber at Gonzo's Royal Flush. Fozzie performs with a tribute band called the Muppets. Miss Piggy is a plus-size fashion editor at Vogue Paris. And Animal is a celebrity anger management rehab centre in Santa Barbara. Now, starring Jason Segel from Bad Teacher, we heard about earlier, Amy Adams from The Fighter, Chris Cooper from The Bourne Identity, plus Kermit the Frog and Miss Piggy. From the trailer, this looks immensely pointless. It's just like a TV episode. Probably stretch it into 90 minutes. I just can't see what the point is. It just adds nothing at all. Anyway. Number three, we've got Happy Feet 2. There'll be more about that in the new releases. Number four, we've got Arthur Christmas, which reveals the incredible, never-seen-before answer to every child's question. So how does Santa deliver all those presents in one night? The answer? Santa's exhilarating ultra-high-tech operation hidden beneath the North Pole. But at the centre of the film is a story about a family in a state of cosmic dysfunction and an unlikely hero. Arthur, with an urgent mission that must be completed before Christmas morning dawns. starring James McAvoy, Bill Nighy, Hugh Laurie and Jim Broadbent. Basically, one child has been missed out, and Arthur is the only one available who can take Santa's sleigh to deliver his presents. This one is definitely for the kids, not least because of the CGI. Number 5, we've got Hugo, which took $11.3 million this week. Now, Hugo is a boy whose father dies, and then his uncle goes missing. He starts to take care of his uncle's cock. He steals from a man who sells Tinker Toys to fix a robot his dad was working on. Along the way, he makes a friend who has the key to help him get the robot working. Now, directed by Martin Scorsese and featuring Ben Kingsley, Ray Winston, Christopher Lee, Sacha Baron Cohen and Emily Mortimer, this is Scorsese's first venture into 3D. And it looks like it'll make a decent family film, but it's too sickly sweet and childish for my taste. Number 6, we've got Jack and Jill. Now, Jack Sadelstein, Adam Sandler, is a successful advertising executive in Los Angeles with a beautiful wife, Katie Holmes, and kids who dress one event each year, the Thanksgiving visit of his identical twin sister, Jill, also Adam Sandler. Jill's neediness and passive aggressiveness is maddening to Jack, turning his normally tranquil life upside down. Also starring as Dana Carvey, Rob Schneider, and lots of cameos including Al Pacino, Johnny Depp, and Shaquille O'Neal. The premise sounds utterly appalling, and after watching the trailer, I can confirm that it is. Adam Sandler, why do people go and see his films anyway? A one-trick pony that went lame so many years ago. Why do you keep encouraging him? Stop. Please stop. Anyway, the trailer for that and all the other films, well, that I'm going into detail about in the top 10, they're all on the Facebook page. You go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. Number 7, we've got Immortals. Number 8, Puss in Boots. Number 9, Tower Heist. And number 10, The Descendants. Okay, so that's the top 10 movie charts. Anyway, we'll be having a look at these new cinema releases out this Friday. But first of all, have a bit of music from Sean Colvin and Sonny Came Home. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Sean Colvin with Sonny Came Home. And you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, live on Manchester's 106.6. Now in this section we'll have a look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, starting off with Happy Feet 2. Oh, by the way, all the trailers for all the films you'll hear about featured on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. Now this is, unsurprisingly, the sequel to Happy Feet, the Academy Award winning smash hit, animated even. Happy Feet 2 returns audiences to the magnificent landscape of Antarctica in superb 3D. Mumble, the master of tap, has a problem because his tiny son, Eric, is choreophobic. Reluctant to dance, Eric runs away and encounters the mighty Sven, a penguin who can fly. Mumble has no hope of competing with his charismatic new role model, but things get worse when the world is shaken by powerful forces. Eric learns of his father's guts and grit as Mumble brings together the penguin nations and all manner of fabulous creatures from tiny krill to giant elephant seals to put things right. Happy Feet 2 is directed by George Miller, who won an Oscar as creator of the original Happy Feet. And the film features the voices of Elijah Wood, Robin Williams, Hank Azaria, Alicia Moore, aka Pink, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, Sofia Vergara, and Hugo Weaving. And I won't be watching it, as, unsurprisingly, it's another kids' film in CGI. Then we have The Thing. Now, this is another film in Antarctica. An extraordinary continent of awesome beauty. It's also home to an isolated outpost where a discovery full of scientific possibility becomes a mission of survival when an alien is unearthed by a crew of international scientists. The shape-shifting creature, trying to say that without being drunk, is accidentally unleashed at this marooned colony. And he has the ability to turn itself into a perfect replica of any living being. It can look just like you or me, but inside it remains inhuman. In the thrill of The Thing, paranoia spreads like an epidemic among a group of researchers as they are infected one by one by a mystery from another planet. Paleontologist Kate Lloyd, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, has travelled to the desolate region for the expedition of a lifetime. Joining a Norwegian scientific team that has stumbled across an extraterrestrial ship buried in the ice, she discovers an organism that seems to have died in the crash eons ago, but it's about to wake up. When a simple experiment frees the alien from its frozen prison, Kate must join the crew's pilot, Carter, Joel Edgerton, to keep it from killing them off one at a time. And in this vast, intense land, a parasite that can mimic anything it touches will pit human against human as it tries to survive and flourish. Well, this has been billed as a prelude to the original, but the trailer just copies so many scenes from the 1981 classic, so it just comes across as completely pointless. Just don't bother with this at all. Just get the excellent original instead. You can get it on DVD, I'm sure it's definitely out on Blu-ray, and I've seen it on HD DVD. Yes, some of those discs do still exist. If you can even get an HD DVD drive for the Xbox 360 for about 15, 20 quid, and the discs are about £1 on a certain online website. But are absolutely well worth getting the original in either any format. And then we have a Pope. And one thing you can always rely on Italy is variety, and this year is no exception. Broad satire comes from Nanni Moretti, who also gives himself one of the starring roles in We Have a Pope, which is a fine return to form after the mixed reviews for The Cayman. The premise is that when the new Pope, Michael Piccoli, on majestic form, is elected, he suddenly gets cold feet, but no one must know until the situation is resolved. Cue great deceptions, bizarre international volleyball matches between teams of cardinals, and psychoanalysis from Moretti's own character. Now, the trailer for this made me laugh several times early on. It looks fascinating to watch, so I'd say an instant yes to this. Definitely worth watching. Then we have Margaret, not about Thatcher. This is a film which centres on a 17-year-old New York City high school student who feels certain that she's inadvertently played a role in a traffic accident that has claimed a woman's life. In her attempts to set things right, she meets with opposition at every step. Torn apart with frustration, she begins emotionally brutalising her family, her friends, her teachers, and most of all, herself. She's been confronted quite unexpectedly with the basic truth that her youthful ideals run a collision course against the realities and compromises of the adult world. Starring Anna Paquin and Mark Ruffalo, the premise sounds like a right load of old flannel, but it actually has promise based on what I've seen from the trailer, although it does tend to fall apart about halfway through when she kisses the teacher, Matt Damon, and when another big name, Matthew Broderick, shows up later on. It looks the kind of thing that would be better suited as an art house movie, with non-household names alongside the two leads, since both of them look well suited to the movie, but others just do not. Finding out this week, we've got Camp Hell. And again, all the trailers for this, just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow and you can see them. Now, at the end of every summer, the children of a Christian community from a suburb of New Jersey attend Camp Hope. They travel deep into the woods, far from any distractions the world provides. Here the children are taught the ways of the Lord, the perils of the flesh, and the horror of the devil. A charismatic priest leads them in their training, but he unknowingly has brought something with him. Something evil. What was supposed to be a safe place, a spiritual retreat, has now turned into a nightmare that not even faith can end. Well, after a high-profile role in The Social Network, the trailer indicates that Jesse Eisenberg is just throwing his rising star status down the drain, as this appears to offer no more than the average, very average slasher thriller does, in a film which also stars Dana Delaney, Andrew McCarthy and Bruce Davidson. It doesn't help that this has gone straight to video in some countries, and it's also taken over a year before it came to the UK, so I really can't recommend that one at all. Okay, now in a moment we're having a look at the new DVDs out this week, including The Hangover 2. But first of all, I'll have a bit of music, and this is one that comes from an advert for Avios, which is the thing that's replaced Air Miles. And so if you're wondering what it is, the music with flying washing machines all over the place, it's a song by Layla Arab, and it's called Underwaters. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Layla Arab with Underwaters, and you're back on Manchester 106.6 with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. Now, in this section, we have a look at the DVDs out this week, starting with Hangover 2. Well, or The Hangover Part 2, whatever you want to call it. In The Hangover Part 2, Stu, Ed Helms, is marrying a Thai American woman, Jamie Chung, and the entire wedding party is flying to Thailand for the ceremony. Quicker than you can say bachelor brunch, the boys are off on some kind of mystery adventure that results in some pretty serious and pretty hilarious, it says here, repercussions. There's an unfortunate tattoo incident, one not easily covered up. There's an unexplained monkey in a Rolling Stones shirt, now added to the entourage, and one of the group is missing. The setup is familiar, the ensemble of actors is so confident, their chemistry so easy, that the viewer enjoys their long, strange trip with burst-out-loud laughs, it says here. Now, it stars Bradley Cooper, Zach Galifianakis, Justin Bartha and Ed Helms, and this is not something I particularly want to see. A lot of people like the original. I haven't seen it. It looks like a laugh from the trailer, but from what I've read, it does nothing new that the original hadn't already done. And apparently that's worth watching, and this one isn't. I don't think the first one's even been on TV yet, but so I might catch it when it is on. Then we have the Smurfs, and when the evil wizard Gargamel chases the tiny blue Smurfs out of their village, they tumble from their magical world and into ours. In fact, smack dab in the middle of Central Park. Just three apples high and stuck in the Big Apple, the Smurfs must find a way to get back to their village before Gargamel tracks them down. Now, anyone's listened to this show for a while, even just this show in general, even on today, for a while, they know my opinion on CGI films, and that won't be changing with this one. Kids will like it, adults might have to tolerate it, I will be giving this a miss. If you do buy it, you can get it on DVD, Blu-ray, and 3D Blu-ray, and the special features include a Find the Smurfs game, deleted and extended scenes, a featurette Going Gargamel, progression reels, Smurfovision with a second screen experience, interact with the Smurfs as they take over your TV and iPad, iPhone, or iPod Touch while you watch the film. The Smurfs' fantastic adventure game help clumsy race through the village and Central Park to stop Gargamel and his evil plans. There's bloopers, as in blue the colour. Oh dear. Happy mo music montage, two commentaries and two featurettes, the Smurfs comic book to the big screen, and Smurfs speak, meet the cast. And we also have out this week Captain Avenger, Captain America rather, the first Avenger. Now, based on the Marvel Comics character from World War II, a brave yet mild-mannered young soldier named Steve Rogers volunteers to undergo a series of experiments for a US Army Super Soldier program. The military succeeds in transforming him into a human weapon, but quickly decide that their super soldier is far too expensive a creation to risk in combat. So they decide to put him to use as an army celebrity and parade him across Europe to boost morale by performing in USO shows for American troops. He's even given a costume that bears the colours of Old Glory for the stage. And then, when a Nazi plot reveals itself, Rogers must rise up and become the first Avenger in order to save his country. Steve Rogers becomes Captain America, and he earns his way into the hearts and souls of every American, bringing hope and justice to a war-weary nation. Later, during a mission to Germany to stop his arch-enemy, the Red Skull, from launching rockets at the Allies, Captain America sacrifices himself and winds up frozen in ice for almost 6 decades. If only he'd done it before this film was made. Revived, Steve Rogers must now join forces with new heroes and become an Avenger of the modern age. It's got a big cast with Chris Evans as Steve Rogers, aka Captain America, plus Hayley Atwell, Sebastian Stan, Tommy Lee Jones, Hugo Weaving, Dominic Cooper, Richard Armitage, Stanley Tucci, Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury, Toby Jones, and Michael Brandon. Now, watching the trailer, it looks like a bit of a laugh, but I'm not particularly into superhero movies, and they seem to be coming out at quite a fast rate these days, so it won't be top of my list. Then also we have Glee, the 3D concert movie. Yeah. Songs you love and dance up a storm on stage. Oh, can you feel the energy? Get swept up in an energy of Glee Live, including performances not seen in the cinemas. Probably for a good reason. Hilarious Sue Sylvester introductions and exclusive interviews. Am I the only one who thinks she looks like Cagney out of Cagney and Lacey? Anyway, it also features Gwyneth Paltrow singing Forget You and not how it's meant to sound. Special features include exclusive performances not seen in cinemas of Dog Days Are Over and Friday, extended performances of Ain't No Way and Happy Days Are Here Again and Get Happy. Actually, a cover of Dog Days Are Over, I can't imagine anyone doing that other than Florence Welch. And quite frankly, I don't want to hear anyone other than her doing it. On stage with the cast, Sue Sylvester introduction number one, Sue Sylvester introduction number two, ooh, and Kurt's proposal. And backstage with the cast, Warbler's clip not seen in cinemas. Again, probably for a good reason. And we also have out this week, Frozen Planet, the complete series. Now, narrated by Sir David Attenborough and from the award-winning team behind Planet Earth and Blue Planet, comes the ultimate portrait of Earth's polar regions. The Arctic and Antarctic, oh, we're back there again, remain the greatest wilderness on Earth. The scale and beauty of the scenery and the sheer power of the elements, the weather, the ocean and the ice, is unmatched anywhere else on our planet. Yet these harsh environments are teeming with life, home to iconic animals from polar bears to emperor penguins, and from killer whales to wandering albatrosses. Using the latest camera technology to film on land, from the air, underwater and below the ice caps, Frozen Planet follows their fascinating lives throughout the seasons as they struggle to survive, with spectacular polar landscapes and amazing animal behaviour, often filmed for the first time, It captures the drama of an extreme world, extreme natural world, with both poles under grave threat from climate change. Believe that, you believe anything. This extraordinary series may be the last chance to witness these great wildernesses before they change forever. Now, the other day I saw another one of those pictures in one of the papers where a polar bear was on a little tiny patch of ice, and you know, I'm getting on my soapbox here a bit, but it was like a zoomed in picture just showing the polar bear looking forlorn on a little bit of ice. But you know that, as they've done before, if you were to zoom out from that picture and show the rest of it, there'd be tons of ice. There's loads of it. As far as from what I remember, there's more of it than there was before. There isn't a problem going down there. Stop worrying about it. Get on with your life. Stop worrying more about paying the bills. The polar bears can swim as well. Do you know that? Polar bears can swim. Stop worrying. There's nothing going on. Blimey. Anyway, gets off soapbox. New movies and main releases out this week also include Aftermath, Arabian Nights, Broken Lines, The Canterbury Tales, which is from the BFI, as Arabian Nights is, Come and See, Medea, also from the BFI, a French film called Q, which has a rather sexy woman on the front cover and looks quite good, Salt of Life, and a foreign movie called Villain. Some TV series and sort of miscellaneous stuff out this week. We've got Beyoncé Live at Roseland, Elements of Four, The Borgias Season 1 on Blu-ray and DVD, Grey's Anatomy Season 6, Il Divo Live in London, JLS, Eyes Wide Open, and My Family, 5 Christmas specials. Wow. The Blu-ray premiere's out this week. We've got Brazil, Terry Gilliam's classic. Well, I thought it was okay. Dark Star, Get Your Sting and Blackout Live in 2011 in 3D from the Scorpions. How to Train Your Dragon in 3D. And so that's one of a number of 3D films out this week. Megamind 3D, Monsters vs. Aliens 3D, One-Eyed Jack's 3D. No, it's not. That's just the Marlon Brando film on Blu-ray. Shrek 3D, Shrek 2 3D, Shrek the Third DVD, oh, come on. Shrek the Third 3D on Blu-ray in 3D. And Shrek Forever After 3D, unsurprisingly. Okay, that's all your films out on DVD and Blu-ray and 3D out this week. Now we're going to have a bit of David Bowie and Let's Dance. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was David Bowie with Let's Dance, and you're back on the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, live from Manchester's 106.6. In this section, to take us up to the top of the hour, we have some film news. And we start off with the news that Steven Soderbergh has walked away from The Man from U.N.C.L.E. According to the playlist, the director has decided to step away from the Warner Brothers title he and writer Scott Z. Burns have been developing after the protracted casting process failed to turn up leads. Rumours linking Matt Damon, Michael Fassbender, Johnny Depp and The Killing's Joel Kinnaman to the planned Spy threequel have come to naught, while George Looney was forced out of contention with a back injury. Soderbergh, meanwhile, is also thought to have balked at creating a multi-location tentpole movie with a distinctly bivouac-like $60 million budget. It's also the news that Scarlett Johansson is to direct Capote's Summer Crossing. She's learned at the feet of Woody Allen and Sofia Coppola in films like Matchpoint and Lost in Translation, and now Scarlett Johansson is ready to direct her own movie. A representative confirms a Variety report that she will helm an adaptation of Summer Crossing, a Truman Capote novella about a teenage debutante who rebels against her penthouse parents and their high society ways. Capote began writing in 1943 when he himself was still a teen, but it wasn't published until after his death 62 years later. Playwright Tristine Skyler will write the screenplay, and Johansson will not play a role in front of the camera. And we have Julia Roberts is to star in a produced workplace comedy, Second Act. Yes, you that laugh. Julia Roberts will return to comedy once again, this time as both star and producer of an upcoming feature from New Regency. The production company confirmed that the Oscar winner will pull double duty on the project, which she'll produce alongside Trudy Seiler, Lisa Gillen and Elaine Goldsmith-Thomas. The film, which does not have a director or writer on board yet, will be about a woman, Roberts, who's forced to head into the working world despite never having held a job before in her life. In other words, a bit of a stretch for Roberts, who's busy as ever and will soon be in a Snow White movie called Mirror Mirror. Alice Eve is up for Star Trek 2, but will she be playing a new character? We're slowly but surely ticking off the things we need to hear to believe that the Star Trek sequel will finally be shooting soon. even with music-centric tweets swapped between Simon Pegg, Scotty, and John Cho, Sulu. So far, we've got a script in the process of being refined, J.J. Abrams on deck to direct, and the distinct possibility that Benicio Del Toro will play the villain. Now, word comes from across subspace that Alice Eve is Abrams' pick for a new role. This being a Bad Robot production, nothing has leaked out yet about who or what Eve will play. She could be a sexy killer robot. But according to a variety of sources, it's likely that it will be a new character in the Trek universe. With Eve in place and Del Toro likely, the cast is slowly filling out beyond returning stars Peg, Cho, Chris Pine, Anton Yelchin, Joe Saldana, or Zoe Saldana rather, not Joe, Zachary Quinto, Carl Urban, and a squad of red-shirted types who should probably be very worried about their immediate future. Shooting is set to start in January, and Star Trek II is scheduled for cinemas on May 17th, 2013. Tom Cruise is the starring Doug Liman sci-fi flick, All You Need Is Kill. It's been a while since Tom Cruise has been in a proper science fiction movie. There's War of the Worlds back in 2005, Minority Report, before that was in 2002, and now he's diving back into the world of big screen speculative fiction with gusto. He's starring in Horizons, formerly titled Oblivion, for director Joseph Kosinski, who also directed Tron Legacy, and it's due sometime in 2013. Now Variety is reporting that Cruise will star in yet another sci-fi tentpole movie, Doug Liman's grammatically challenged All You Need Is Kill. He had been considering the role for a while and apparently is now officially in. Based on a Japanese graphic novel by Hiroshi Sakurazaka, All You Need Is Kill tells the story of a soldier who is killed while fighting a war against aliens, and then awakens to find himself repeating the same day. The bad news is that he's going to keep getting killed over and over again. The good news is that he's able to carry knowledge and training over to each new incarnation, so he might eventually be able to change his fate. It's a premise that's been used tons of times, from Groundhog Day to the short-lived Taye Diggs TV series Daybreak. Not at all like our Daybreak over here, thank God. We haven't seen it apply to this sort of science fiction setting before, however, so All You Need Is Kill might just be worthy of our attention. Dante Harper originally wrote the script, which must have proven his sci-fi chops to somebody, as one of his other projects is the big screen adaptation of Isaac Asimov's Sprawling Foundation series. Joby Harold, Awake, then did the rewrite that apparently caught Cruise's eye. And All You Need Is Kill should be shooting sometime in late 2012. Okay, that's the end of the first hour. Now coming up in the second hour, we've got a mixture of video games and TV, starting with a review of Rage on the Xbox 360. After that, we'll have a look at the top 10 games charts, the new video games releases, and some video games news. TV-wise, we'll have a look back at The Cafe and That's Britain. Also have a look ahead to some more programmes coming up, and also some TV news. First of all, we'll have a bit of music. It takes up to the top of the hour, and we'll have Pulp and Sorted for Ease and Whiz. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Wax in American English. And you're back on the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, for the second hour. And this hour, we take a look at video games and all things to do with TV. So we're going to start off with a review of Rage on the Xbox 360. Have a look at the top 10 games charts, new video games releases, and some video games news. Then in the second half hour, we'll have a look at some TV programmes already watched, The Cafe and That's Britain. A look ahead, some more programmes coming up, and also some TV news. So we started with a review of Rage on the Xbox 360. Now, Rage is a game we've been greatly looking forward to, giving ID Software's previous pedigree, including Wolfenstein 3D, Doom and Quake. Okay, so they also did have Daikatana, but that can't ever happen again, can it? In Rage, the year is 2029. You live on Apophis, and there aren't a lot of people left after an asteroid collision. Naturally, you only know this when you come to, having woken up inside an Ark, as one of the VIPs buried underground in cryostasis pods, as a plan to rebuild the Earth. That said, the Ark you're in has malfunctioned and everyone else has snuffed it. You'll encounter other humans along the way, but also a great deal of mutants who need to be blasted into next week. For a first-person shooter game, however, there's a considerable amount of driving about, which puts this on a level with a game like Red Faction Guerrilla. Sounds like one of the Jackie Smith films. Okay, so that's the basics out of the way, and then comes playing the game itself. Now, to have loading screens in between sections is annoying, especially when they drag on for ages, but while this game does give you the option to save the entire game to the hard drive, which at 22 gigabytes, or even one disc at a time, 7 or 8. That doesn't really work if you only have a 20 gigabyte hard drive on your Xbox that's pretty much completely full already. I had to clear out a load of stuff, you know, a load of my stuff to make some space so I could install disc one. I say you didn't have to, but, you know, I went ahead with it in the end anyway. But even then I still got some loading screens, so I was beginning to wish I just hadn't bothered. Note that the game comes on 3 dual-layer DVDs, with the campaign game on the first two and the multiplayer on disc 3. Another gripe is that you can't interact with the environment. There's a lot to look at as you run around, but once you try and hit or shoot at something that's not running about or is meant to move, then you won't get any reaction out of it. So that just distances itself from the Red Faction series in terms of interaction. And when it comes to things to look at, I have to point out that close-up scenery definition isn't great, but a lot of the scenery does look amazing from afar. It also suffers locked door syndrome, meaning that, you know, in addition to corridors to run down, there's the hope that you can duck into a room to escape the baddies, but it's not a proper door, so you can't go in. I do hate that. Need to know about anything else annoying? Kill a baddie, then unlike any other first-person shooter, you can't just walk over their dropped weaponry and pick it up. You can't even bend down and press a button to get it either. It's just inaccessible to you, you know, why? And make sure you save regularly. While the hard difficulty setting wasn't hard for any seasoned gamer at first, the enemies did get harder to beat later on. And there are so few auto-save points in this game that from time to time you'll meet too many baddies, get bumped off, and then you'll end up having to traverse a long distance to get back to where you left off. There's also a very bizarre system when you get shot and are close to death. You sort of see your two joysticks as defib paddles, and then have to be moved into certain positions as many times as possible in just 8 seconds. Then as the indicators of LT and right T, i.e. left and right triggers, move back and forth over a certain spot, you have to press them at the same time like a duck shoot. Get it right and you'll come back to life. I thought Rage was going to be an all-out action first-person shooter, but there's just too many RPG-style elements, such as customising weapons and vehicles. And at some point Janice told me to mix together a grenade and bandages. I'm not sure for what purpose, but something happened with them. Similarly with the lock grinder, at least I knew the purpose for that was to open certain doors, but the premise with those was to pick up certain specific items from all over the place which will come together to form a lock grinder at the time when you need it. Other small items along the way, such as cans and wine bottles, you can sell to the local merchant once you get back to Dan Hagar's house, or it's more like a shack, in order to make a few bucks. Overall, I played this game for a few hours and just found myself getting very bored towards the end of this time. Okay, so I didn't make a lot of headway in the game, as you'll see from the footage, but when you just don't get the necessary buzz from a game, how are you expected to continue? I mean, note that in the footage online, the timestamps don't appear to have racked up a lot of game time, but that's because I was having to replay the sections due to continually getting killed. Well, fools rush in and all that, rather than being stealthy. If multiplayer gaming is your bag, then Rage has two multiplayer modes, Road Rage and Legends of the Wasteland. Road Rage features up to 4 players competing in a free-for-all match that takes place in an arena designed to make use of the vehicles. The objective is to collect rally points that appear around the arena while killing your opponents and stealing their points. Legends of the Wasteland is a series of 2-player co-op missions based on stories that are heard throughout the single-player campaign. There are a total of 9 objectives in this game type. Okay, when it comes to the scores, graphics and sound, I'd give them a 7 out of 10 because it's not fantastic. Playability, 7. Enjoyment, 4. Overall, 6 out of 10. I mean, I am really disappointed with this. It's not Daikatana, but it's not Doom or Quake. You know, the Quake games are amazing. Why can't we have one of them? But another fantastic single-player mode like the first two games. I didn't like Quake 3 because I'm not into multiplayer, quite honestly. And I love the single player part of the first two Quake games, so I'd rather have more of that. Anyway, before we have the top 10 game charts, we're going to have a bit more music, and we have XTC and Sergeant Rock is going to help me. So it's 106.6. 106.6. That was XTC and Sergeant Rock is going to help me. And you're back on Life of Manchester's 106.6, the DVD Fever show with me, Dom Robinson. Now, this section we'll have a look at the top 10 games charts first of all. So, well, then we'll have the new video games releases coming out this Friday. But to look at the charts, first of all, at number 1 is, again, we've got Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. And number 2, we've got Assassin's Creed Revelations. And number 3, we've got Saints Row the Third. Number 4, The Elder Scrolls V: Skyrim. I brought you a news story last time about some dumb couple in America who'd named their child after whatever the name was called in the game itself, and they got also, well, they got a lot of publicity for it, but also I bet they get a lot of stick from their family and neighbours. Anyway, that's number four. Number five, FIFA 12. Number six, WWE 12. Number seven, Professor Layton and the Spectre's Call. Number eight, Just Dance 3 Special Edition. Number nine, Battlefield 3. And number 10, Super Mario 3D Land. The rest of the charts, we've got a re-entry for Kinect Sports at number 34. And a couple of new entries at number 36, Nintendogs and Cats Golden Retriever. And number 38, Lord of the Rings, War in the North. Now, we've got some new video games releases coming out this Friday, starting off with Serious Sam 3 BFE. This is the next evolution of the classic arcade-style first-person shooter, ratcheting up the franchise's old-school frantic action and trademark irreverence and redefining the twitch shooter genre. Serving as a prequel to the original indie sensation, Serious Sam: The First Encounter, Serious Sam 3 BFE takes place during the Earth's final struggle against mentals invading legions of beasts and mercenaries. Set against the collapsing temples of an ancient civilization and the crumbling cities of 22nd century Egypt, Serious Sam 3 is an exhilarating fusion of classic twitch shooters and modern gameplay features. Trademark features such as relentless hordes of spectacular enemies and expansive outdoor battlefields return in the game at full force. There's also frantic arcade-style action, a calling card of the Serious Sam series. Hold down the trigger and lay waste to a never-ending onslaught of attackers or face being overrun by mental savage beasts. No cover systems, no camping, it's just you and them. All of them. Mental's Fearsome Legions. This is a new battalion of unforgettable minions, including the rumbling Scrapjack and towering Kunum. They join the legendary Headless Kamikaze, Gnar, and Syrian Weeble. Your days of mowing down zombie Nazi space pirates are over. There's also Serious Melee Attacks. When an enemy slips by a wall of leaden pain, use one of the all-new innovative melee moves to drop an enemy right where they stand in the most violent way possible. There's also Pure Multiplayer Mayhem. Play through the full campaign mode with up to 16 players or drop the gauntlet and let the heavy ordnance fly in versus modes like Deathmatch and Beast Hunt. This is the next level of Serious Sam multiplayer and all hell is about to break loose. And also we have out this week, God Eater Burst on PSP, what a bizarre name. In the near future, the Earth is plagued by altered beasts known as Aragami. Just when all was thought to be lost, a biochemical corporation called Fenrir created the God Ark, the only weapon capable of killing the Aragami. In God Eater, the player is a member of an elite force created to wield the God Ark and crush the hostile gods. Your mission is to defeat the Aragami and gather the material from them for research. But you come to realise that you are being drawn to a giant conspiracy that will irreversibly alter the fate of humanity. God Eater Burst is the enhanced version of the PSP hit God Eater, released in 2009, although I'd never heard of it before, which sold over 600,000 units in Japan to date. In response to the requests of fans and European gamers who have been eagerly awaiting the game's PAL release, Namco will launch the reworked game with new content, skills, abilities and AI. Also this week we've got Off-Road Drive on the PC. And Off-Road Drive is the next title in the famous Off-Road Driving Simulation series. Players will participate in various international competitions never seen before in a video game. All virtual contests are the exact duplicates of the real ones, including various extreme driving and use of the rules established by international auto sports federations. Vehicles in the game have the same features as real prototypes. Each one belongs to a certain class suitable for certain competitions and fully complies with the international requirements. While completing the tracks in varying difficulties, players not only control the speed and heading of the vehicle, but locking the main front and rear differential gears using the winch, shifting into low gear and adjusting tyre pressure. Now you can explore six regions: Thailand, South Africa, Russia, Malaysia, USA and Australia. You can choose from 42 unique tracks with plenty of difficult obstacles such as swaps, water bodies, steep slopes, quicksands and rock blockages. You can join 20 racing events and drive 20 off-road vehicles based on real prototypes and most popular vehicles of the racing world. Okay, so that's all your top 10 video games charts this week, plus look at what's new out on Friday. In the meantime, we'll have a sorry. In a few minutes, we'll have a look at some video games news out this week. But in the meantime, we'll have a bit of music from it's a band from the other two called Tasty Fish, and it's a song which actually I think they're the Stephen and Gillian from New Order, and they wrote this song in dedication. They never say the word Tasty Fish in the song. They wrote it in dedication to a particular fish and chip shop on the A6 in Stockport, which have I ever been in? I might have been in once, I can't remember. But apparently they sell Tasty Fish. Well, they're called Tasty Fish. Whether they sell Tasty Fish, I don't know. Other fish and chip shops are available. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was the other two with Tasty Fish, and you're back on Live from Manchester 106.6 on the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. Now, this section, we have a look at some video games news, starting with the news that the Nintendo 3DS has surpassed the DS first-year sales. The launch has proved more successful than the original DS, Nintendo has revealed. Nintendo of America boss Reggie Fils-Aimé told Time that the system has sold 2.3 million units in 8 months, beating the DS's first-year sales. He attributed numerous factors, including recent Mario releases, Super Mario 3D Land and Mario Kart 7, for its healthy sales. 3DS has been having positive momentum since the digital content came on board with the eShop, the launch of Ocarina of Time, and obviously the price reduction, he said. We've been able to fuel that fire with Pokemon, Rumble Beast, and Star Fox. What Mario did was bring a whole new range of consumers into the 3DS franchise. It was added that The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword has become the fastest selling release in the series in the US. The 3DS will receive the Circle Pad Pro peripheral, say that when you're drunk, in January alongside horror adventure Resident Evil Revelations. Nintendo 3DS will also see a firmware update adding 3D video recording and new Street Pass content next month. There's also the news that Gran Turismo 5 Spec 2 has been announced for Japan. A package will feature the full version of Gran Turismo 5 and all subsequent updates released online, according to Andrea Sang. It will include October's 2.0 title update, which added interior views for all standard cars, improved car physics, and the ability to save progress during endurance races. Gran Turismo 5 Spec 2 will be available from February the 2nd for about 5,000 yen, which is about £40, while the Western release is yet to be confirmed. Polyphony Digital recently confirmed that Gran Turismo 6 is in development. Also, the news that Tomb Raider movie producer Graham King has revealed he took inspiration from Rise of the Planet of the Apes for the Lara Croft franchise reboot. He's received a script from Iron Man screenwriters Mark Fergus and Hawk Ospie and said, "We're going through the script creatively, bringing in directors to talk to, and then I get that horrible job of sitting with 25 to 30 young girls that want to play Lara Croft." God, it's really tough, isn't it? Asked about his approach with the new Lara Croft movie, King said, "For me, it's reinventing the wheel a bit. It's a reboot. We're going back to before she was Lara Croft, so it's much more than an emotional character piece. She's in search of her parents." Oh God, makes it sound like Bruce Wayne. "One of my favourite movies of the year was Rise of the Planet of the Apes and the way they rebooted that franchise. I thought it was fantastic, and that took a lot of that away. I took a lot away from that for Tomb Raider." And we also have the news that the PS Vita launch games have been announced. So, and just announced, well, the launch games will be coming out for the PS Vita, and they're claiming it will have the best launch of any console yet, and it's looking good so far. The titles include Uncharted, Golden Abyss, Wipeout 2048, Reality Fighters, Little Deviants, Mod Nation Racers, Road Trip, Everybody's Golf, Escape Plan, Top Darts, Hustle Kings, Unit 13, and Motorstorm RC. Sony have really pushed the third-party developers into creating what looks like some stunning launch titles. Here are just some of them which are out alongside the launch of the PS Vita on February the 22nd, 2012. We have Army Corps of Hell, Dungeon Hunter Alliance, Disney Warriors Next, EA Sports FIFA Football, F1 2011, Lego Harry Potter Years 5-7, Michael Jackson, The Experience HD, ooh. Nina Gaiden, working title, Oddworld, Stranger's Wrath, Rayman Origins, Ridge Racer, Shinobido 2, I enjoyed the original Shinobido on the PSP, that's quite a few years ago now, Silent Hill, Book of Memories, Super Monkey Ball, Banana Splits, Supremacy, MMA, Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom, and Virtua Tennis 4, World Tour Edition, plus also Mortal Kombat, Assassin's Creed, Bioshock, Street Fighter X Tekken, and Call of Duty. Okay, so that's all your video games news and everything to do with video games for this week. And in a moment, we have a look at some TV programs watched recently. First of all, a bit of music from the AC Marias, and One of Our Girls Has Gone Missing. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was the AC Marias with One of Our Girls Has Gone Missing. And you're back on the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, live from Manchester's 106.6. Now, in this section, we have a look at TV programmes watched in the past week, or rather, last couple of weeks, since I wasn't here last week. But anyway, first one we have a look at is That's Britain. Now, Nick Knowles and Julia Bradbury present a warm-hearted studio show about the good, the bad and the ugly in modern Britain. In the first episode, Grain Sewage, whoever she is, tackles junk mail. Now, I know she is because I've seen her on TV now. She tackles junk mail while Lady Edmondson follows a journey luggage makes to the airport system. Larry Lamb tries to bring back petrol pump attendants, and Stanley Johnson highlights the amazing public spirit of the British public with a hidden camera experiment. The team also tried to find the worst potholes in Britain and celebrate the members of the public doing the jobs that keep Britain ticking. It opened with Nick and Julia stood uncomfortably right in the middle of the audience, all turning their chairs towards the pair as if they were about to savage them and leave their remains for the cheapest chip studio guests, including Barry from EastEnders, aka Sean Williamson, here trying to big up the cause of the bus conductor. First up in the list of complaints was junk mail, and Gronner Shoger, I think it's pronounced, was off to investigate. Apparently we get more junk mail than ever before because the rules were relaxed as to how much the Royal Mail can deliver, from 3 a week to an unlimited amount. New government legislation will stop the amount that's allowed to come through our doors, but will that result in a higher price for stamps as a result? However, the site is basically a replacement for existing services such as the junk mail equivalent to the telephone preference service. Next up was Sean Williamson, as the bus conductor mentioned, trying to show that such a position would make people feel safer on buses, but then went on to make himself look the prat by pretending to do a terrible impression of Blakey from On the Buses. Then we had Aidan Edmondson telling us that 29 million pieces of luggage get lost every year in airports, even though there are CCTV cameras studying its trip around the place and onto the plane, and that there's a 0.3% chance of your bag actually getting lost worldwide. Despite that, Aid's bag still got lost on the way back to London. And there was also a piece about massive potholes, with the biggest one being so big that it enveloped a car as it filled with water and a whole car completely fell into it. It was also suggested that spitting in the street should be made a crime. Well, I thought it was when policemen walked by. And that bus conductors should be paid danger money if they were to be brought back. Then they also had a word war which turns your gripes into grumpy graffiti, basically acting like a tag cloud on a website. Basically, the more someone mentions a topic, the bigger it gets. The winner in all this by the end of the first show? Dog poo. How come the winner wasn't either Julia or Bradbury or Nick Knowles? And the second show also featured Stephen K. Amos, who must be hard up these days because he had to do, a piece about bringing back the milkman. You know, well, we have shops for that thing. Anyway, I have long life milk and it works perfectly fine. You pour it out, the carton goes in your tea. Lovely. I don't need a milkman. Anyway, after the second show, since one of the things that annoys me is TV presenters who say /" in a web address, because it's just /, there's no /" in a web address, you see, I pointed this out to the pair of them via Twitter, and Julia replied, "It's just become part of our vocabulary, like .com, innit? And /" sounds wrong." And so I gave her, ha ha, a link to the BBC's own website that tells them to use /. Ha 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 ha. That's Britain. That's life rip-off. That's BBC cutbacks for you. Also, this week, recently watched The Cafe on Sky One, which is on every Wednesday at 9 o'clock. It starts off with two episodes back-to-back. It's called a freshly brewed comedy written by and starring Ralph Little and Michelle Terry, with Craig Cash on directing and executive producing duties. First episode was called There's No Place Like Home, and the second one was called Afternoon Teas, where Sarah chases some literary agents and the Dobsons spark a heated debate about jam and cream. And something's going on with Carol and the cafe too. Sky One HD opens up The Cafe, a comic love letter to the British seaside that's every bit as satisfying as a bacon sarnie and a cup of tea. Director and executive producer Craig Cash, from the Royal Family, Early Doors and Sunshine, has taken a script by Ralph Little, the Royal Family, from the Royal Family and Two Pints of Lager, and the Olivier Award-winning Michelle Terry from Reunited, and injected it with its trademark naturalism and eye for the tiny details that make life a joy. The cafe is set in and around a cafe in Western Supermare run by generational trilogy Mary, June Watson, Carol, Ellie Haddington, and Sarah Michelle Terry. Acting as the social hub of the seafront town, the cafe sees all walks of life pass through and gives viewers an honest portrayal of life in a typical British seaside resort. It's a gentle slice of life observant comedy which began with Carol's mum Mary, June Watson, recounting a story about a bin man falling over. Not exactly hilarious, but amusing in the way she ended up repeating it because she's forgetful at that age. In fact, it's little moments like that which make this a joy to watch, but the ones which I can't get across in a review because you have to watch the programme to see how they all come across. Carol's daughter, the aspiring Sarah, Michelle Terry, aspiring writer rather, says she isn't looking for a boyfriend yet, but it's clear that she's sweet on Richard, Ralph Little, a guy who's kind of enthusing about a car he's yet to buy. When the opportunity arises for his band to support Meatloaf on his 2012 comeback tour, he says he can't do it because it's on a Tuesday, and he teaches guitar on a Tuesday. That said, her mum wants her to go out with John, Daniel Ings, a Flash Harry type guy with a sports car who was in her A-level English class. Add little touches like Carol, Ellie Haddington saying talk of the devil at whoever who walks through the door of a cafe, and you have a comedy well worth watching with a cast that works well together. That's as long as it can get some progression going through the series. Since while the first episode did well at introducing the characters, the second one just mostly treaded water. After bringing in a couple of new faces, including Brian Murphy as Jack Dobson, who'd already been introduced to his wife Alice, played by Marcia Warren in the first episode, and he just repeated the same old joke about what's the fastest cake in the world, scone, making it feel like, in parts, a bad 70s sitcom. Overall, it's more like Early Doors and The Royal Family, so if you enjoyed that, then this is certainly worth giving a go. It runs for 6 episodes, and I've only seen the first 2 at this point, so I'll see how long I can last with it. Okay, so we're having a look at some programmes coming up in the coming week in a moment. First of all, I'll have a bit of music from Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and Touch and Go. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Emerson, Lake and Palmer with Touch and Go. And you're back live from North Manchester on 106.6. It's the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. In this section, we'll have a look at some programmes coming up in the coming week, starting off with Without You, which is on ITV on Thursday at 9 o'clock. It's a three-parter over 3 weeks. Okay, it's a gripping new three-part thriller based on a novel by Nikki French. Schoolteacher Ellie Manning hears the devastating news that her husband Greg has been killed in a car accident. And her grief is compounded when police tell her that Greg did not die alone. Another woman, Lena Livingston, was in the car with him. Now, faced with the shattering knowledge that Greg was having an affair, Ellie is determined to discover everything she can about Milena. Ellie's best friends Gwen, Fergus and Joe rally round to help, but are unable to stop her obsession with the woman who died with Greg. It stars Anna Friel, Pippa Hayward, Clive Wood, Mark Warren, Tim Woodward and Barnaby Kay. So there's a good cast in there, so I think that may be certainly worth a watch. That's on Thursday at 9 o'clock on ITV. Also on, over 3 weeks, is Black Mirror on Sundays. Now, the first episode has already been on, this one, so I'll be having a look at them next week. It's the first episode called The National Anthem. That's on 9 o'clock. The Charlie Brooker returns to Channel 4 with 3 standalone dramas that are sharp, suspenseful, satirical tales with a techno-paranoia bent. Charlie authors the first 2, while the third is written by Jesse Armstrong. Over the last 10 years, technology has transformed almost every aspect of our lives before we've had time to stop and question it. In every home, on every desk, in every palm, a plasma screen, a monitor, a smartphone, a black mirror of our 21st century existence. Our grip on reality is shifting. We worship at the altars of Google and Apple. Facebook algorithms know us more intimately than our own parents. We have access to all the information in the world, but no brain space left to absorb anything longer than a 140-character tweet. It stars Rupert Everett, Julia Davis, Lindsay Duncan, Daniel Kaluuya, Jessica Brown Finley, and Ashley Thomas. The first episode, though, features, so it's called The National Anthem, features Greg Kinnear as the Prime Minister, and his daughter's been kidnapped, and he has to get involved with a pig, but I'm not going to say any more, because given the time of day we're on. The second episode, we called 15, that's on this week, this Sunday, 9:30, it's called 15 Million Merits, and it's set in a sarcastic version of a future reality. This 15 Million Merits is a satire on entertainment shows and our insatiable thirst for distraction. In this world where everyone is confined to a life of strange physical drudgery, the only way to escape this life is to enter the hotshot talent show and pray you can impress the judges. There's also the third episode will be called The Entire History of You, and that's on Sunday next week at 9 o'clock. Also, it's worth a watch on Sunday, 8:15 on Channel 4, is a Japan tsunami caught on camera. This film captures the impact of the earthquake and tsunami that devastated Japan in March 2011 using amateur footage filmed by those caught up in the disaster. Featuring never-before-seen footage, the programme gives accounts from eyewitnesses, amateur photographers and video enthusiasts, whose initial desire to record the tsunami was quickly overtaken by the cataclysmic events that unfolded in front of them. But they kept on filming, many while only narrowly escaping with their lives. The eyewitness film captures some apocalyptic images of the wave's destructive power, much of which has never been seen on TV before. Takayuki Saijo only just made it up a hill in time to see the town of Kamayashi destroyed beneath him. Kenshi Murakami had to run for his life, climbing a high school fire escape while filming the carnage below. And Yu Moroga narrowly escaped death as his car was swept away in the torrential current and then sank. And then a program that's definitely one to miss, on Friday on ITV at 9 o'clock, the nation's favourite Bee Gees song. Amanda Holden narrates a special programme celebrating the amazing catalogue of Bee Gees hits and counting down the top 20 to reveal the nation's favourite. The show reveals the stories behind the songs and features in-depth interviews with Barry and Robin Gibb, as well as a version of Stayin' Alive which has been lost since 1977. The Gibb brothers have created some of the greatest songs in modern music history, but which is the greatest of the lot? The tracks include How Deep Is Your Love, Chain Reaction, Tragedy, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart, and Night Fever. Voters are spoiled for choice, it says here. There are also contributions from celebrity fans including Elton John, Cliff Richard, Ronan Keating, Mick Hucknall, Dave Grohl and Katie Melua. All have clearly nothing better to do on a Friday night. Okay, so that's the TV programmes up in the coming week. And in a bit we'll have some TV news. First of all, I'm going to try and fit in a Christmas song each week on the road to Christmas. And I'm going to start off with a song from Frank Sidebottom, the late great Chris Seavey. This is simply called Christmas Is Really Fantastic. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Frank Sidebottom with Christmas Is Really Fantastic. And you're back with, on Live from North Manchester, 106.6, the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. And it's the last part of the show today. And we're going to have some TV news to take us up to the top of the hour. And the first news, first of all, is that Channel 5 Plus One launches today. Some 14 years after the main channel started, and several years after most other commercial channels got their act into gear, Channel 5 Plus One launches, and you can watch all your favourite shows an hour later. Or in the case of Channel 5, there's plenty of another chance to miss. Still, for me, it'll mean I don't have to decide between the right stuff on Channel 5 and new episodes of Homes Under the Hammer on BBC One. I'm addicted to that. The new channel will be on Sky Digibox's Channel 177, replacing 5 USA Plus One. Get that cough out of the way. Also, the news that Dexter is renewed for two more seasons, and the show will likely end after Season 8. While negotiations for a seventh season of Showtime's smash hit series Dexter came to a stalemate early last month, unsurprisingly, all parties involved have finally come to an agreement as the network has renewed the show for two more seasons. The series is the hallmark of Showtime's original programming, and even though it's in its sixth season, the ratings continue to rise from week to week. Deadline was able to speak to Showtime Entertainment David Nevins, who said that Season 8 will most likely be the show's final run. He said, "I'm not going to say with absolute certainty that this is the end, but that's a likely scenario that the series is moving towards a definite end." Nevins went on to say that they plotted out a three-year plan for the show, and that includes the current sixth season. He says, "The biggest question was, what is the trajectory of the show creatively? And after speaking with executive producers John Goldwyn, Sarah Colleton and Scott Buck, it became pretty clear that there was a very clear three-year trajectory. Now, while all fans would love to see Dexter continue on and on forever, it's clear that any show can outstay its welcome, so would it be best to go out on a high? It would be best to go out on a high, obviously, but will Dexter's serial killer secret ever be revealed? Coming back for two more years gives us clarity about how and when it will go out," Nevin said later at Showtime's annual holiday party in Los Angeles. "There's things that are going to happen this season that will set up a very clear end game that will take two seasons to tell. You've got to be there for the last two episodes of Season 6. He added that having that definitiveness always helps. It's rare to have that degree of certainty. Nevins claimed that he would never say never to a ninth season of Dexter, but confirmed that the eighth run is likely to be the show's last. Everybody is operating under that assumption, he said, though things could take a turn creatively where they come to us and say they need more time. You also have the news this week that the 8 out of 10 cats are to take on Countdown. The regulars on the panel show 8 After 10 Cats had to take part in a one-off special episode of the daytime quiz show Countdown. In early January, to celebrate 30 years of Channel 4, the broadcaster is organising a night called Channel 4's Mashup, which will see its regular hosts and presenters try their hand at other shows. As part of the night, Jimmy Carr will present an episode of Countdown with 8 Out of 10 Cats team captains Sean Locke and John Richardson as the contestants. The Channel 4 press release teases, will the team get beaten by the fiendish Countdown conundrum? Also during the mashup evening, Alan Carr will take part in an episode of Property Show Location, Location, Location. Kirstie Allsop will teach the chatty man host the tricks of the property trade. Will Alan manage to negotiate a very real house purchase for the very real single girl in need of a home? Will anybody care? Other swaps include Hugh Fernie Whittingstall being joined at River Cottage by some very surprising helpers, the stars of reality show Made in Chelsea hosting a Come Dine With Me dinner party, and Davina McCall playing an episode of Multi-Million Pound Drop herself with the money going to charity. I bet she'll be flipping annoyed if she wins £1 million, although it's generally pretty unlikely. Throughout the night, rolling hosts will introduce each show, and there'll also be comic sketches from comedians too. Okay, so that's all your TV news for this week, and just everything on the programme in general. So thanks to everyone who listened. We're back this time next week. And just, by the way, check out all the trailer links and gaming footage from the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. And in the meantime, to take it up to the top of the hour, we'll have a song which is actually heard back in 1990 when KFM Radio in Stockport used to be around. That's where I first heard it. And it's by Sean Penn's brother. The guy's called Michael Penn, and it's called No Myth. This is 106.6.
106.6.